So maybe, I don't know, maybe the international line is open. Take that if you want, especially if you're calling from another country. Heaven, our enduring fascination with the afterlife. Your questions and comments for Lisa Miller next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponet. Lisa Miller is a former writer for the Wall Street Journal, now for Newsweek, covers religion topics, and has gone to great lengths to write a comprehensive survey of the story of heaven. Francine on a wildcard line gets us started from California on Coast to Coast. Francine?
Hi, Ian and Lisa. My mother died from a prolonged death because of cancer, and after she died, I think I actually went to heaven to see where she was living. I'm 40 years old and have dreamt all my life, and this is different. I believe that I was taken to show, to be shown where she was living, and it was different than any other dream I've ever had. It felt different. I could feel the air. I could see things that I'd never seen before. It was the most amazing experience. It happened twice. And what's funny is that I could feel her, but I didn't see her. And the way things looked and the way things felt was it's so hard to even talk about the beauty and the even the feel of the air, like when you go, for example, to the beach and you feel the ionization of the air from the water,
Sure.
and it comes, it really at every level with your skin and your breathing, to feel that and even be carrying that. When I woke up from it, I could still smell it.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, let me ask Lisa, out of what Francine just said, do people that don't die go to heaven? I
Well,
mean,
yeah, I mean, Paradiso, the Dante's vision of heaven. He didn't die. He was depressed, and he had a, or in some kind of bad place, and he had this vision of heaven that was about all of these different layers of light and brightness.
Well, I'm trying to get away from the word vision, though, because that's what people say about Francine while she was having a vision. The idea that the only people that can actually go to heaven to stay in heaven or to are, you know, have died, whether it's they're dying on the operating table or on the roadside, they're in the process of dying. There are
Right.
no living people that get to go to heaven and then come back, who
Well,
never at any point don't die.
I would stick with the Dante example. I mean, he didn't die and he saw heaven. Enoch, we don't know what happened to him. It doesn't say in the Bible that he died.
Well, they ceased to exist. They never saw him again, theoretically.
He was no more and
He
gone.
was no more. Yeah.
But he didn't, you know, we don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of other examples. There are examples of people who say they've seen heaven without having died. I mean, Revelation is an example of somebody who says that he saw heaven without having died.
Yeah, I guess I'm still coming back to seeing heaven, having, you know, a prophetic vision of heaven and being in heaven
I am
is
not
being.
in a position to know which is which. Are you?
Huh? Nobody's going by their own language. And so, I mean,
I
it's just
mean,
like in their own testimony.
I guess I would say, you know, if somebody says they saw heaven, I believe they saw what they said they saw. And I don't, I can't distinguish between, you know, a vision and a real journey. I don't know from, you know, as a listener, what the difference is. So I'm just gonna say, okay, I believe that you saw that.
Daniel is in California on Coast to Coast. Daniel?
Hello.
Hey.
Yes, I've been in heaven once as a near-death experience and also through a vision. I'm a Bible scholar. I read Hebrew and Greek. One thing that I'd like to share with everyone here is in Job chapter 33, for example, that's the first time that we see heaven. it's encapsulated in just a few verses here, where it talks about a man and his flesh is fresher than a child's. He returns to the days of his youth. He sees God face to face with joy. There's righteousness. He is forgiven of his sins, and he is delivered from the pit or Sheol. That's the hell. And so that's, and he sees the light, and we know God is light. So that's the first time that we see heaven there in the oldest book of the Bible, in Job chapter 33.
Why do you call it the oldest book of the Bible?
Because Job is, by many historians, the oldest book. It was the one, first one to be penned down. It's before Moses, when he wrote down in Genesis.
You're saying that Moses wrote Genesis. Okay. Hey, let me, well, based on what Daniel just said, then to Lisa, can we talk about, we didn't really talk about Sheol too much, but it is an important piece to this discussion of the afterlife, right?
Definitely. I mean, when I say, you know, they didn't have heaven in the Torah, they did have a place called Sheol. And Sheol is this kind of netherworld to which you descend, and you have some kind of shady continued life as a spirit or something. And there was a sense that, you know, people from Sheol could come back and haunt you. And there's this famous story about Samuel calling up King Saul and saying, from Sheol, and asking him for advice on a battle. So the question is, who went to Sheol? Did everybody go there? Did only some people who were, disconnected from God go there? Scholars disagree about, you know, who went to Sheol. But there's no question that before there was heaven, the people who became the Jews believed in some kind of afterlife.
And yet he was very quick to identify Sheol as like hell. And I think that's he's been drawing too fine a point on the pit, on the under afterlife, as opposed to the heavenly afterlife.
Right. Hell, it doesn't exist without heaven, right? It's a pair. So Sheol was this kind of place where souls lived. And it wasn't any place anybody wanted to go. But it wasn't damnation.
First time caller line, Andrew is in New York City. The book is Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. Andrew?
Yes. Hi, Ian. Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question. I actually had a comment / correction for Lisa. I am LDS actually, and you mentioned your friend who was excommunicated, correct?
Yeah.
And she was devastated she wouldn't be able to see her sister in heaven. It actually works really a little different. As the Apostle Paul talks about the 3 degrees in heaven, it's a hypothetically, if she did not go to the highest degree of heaven, her sister, if she did go to the highest, is able to come down and see her sister. So they are able to be together. It's just her sister who was excommunicated. The doctor said she wouldn't be able to go up to the higher level and see her sister up there.
Andrew, do you believe in these degrees of heaven?
Well, I do, actually. I believe that I think it's a really good, I don't know, way of judgment of how it will be in the afterlife.
Okay, very good. Thank you. I appreciate that. And let's go to Travis is in Houston, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast for Lisa Miller. Travis?
Hello. I was going to ask about Saul. You just brought that same situation up about, you know, Saul was the first anointed of God, and he disobeyed God by not completely annihilating the Amalekites and all their possessions. That was he disobeyed God, so I believe his companionship, his anointing was cut off at that time. And then he was going in to fight the Philistines, and he knew that he was surrounded, and he didn't know what to do, and he kept trying to get a hold of some kind of guidance from God, because he used to guide Saul. And then he went and he turned up the, I forget her name, the Witch of Endor.
Yeah.
And so, you know, God could have let anybody, any demonized imp or whatever, take control and give him the message from Samuel. Samuel being the first prophet of God, God allowed Samuel, the real Samuel, to come up and give him what he needed to know. And Samuel told him that this time today, tomorrow, you and your sons will be with me. Now my question is where is Samuel? Now you brought up the show, and I'm thinking, you know, Saul committed suicide, and if he was going to be with Samuel, and he was the first anointed of God, even though he disobeyed the sacrifices and all the blueprints of Christ, he had done. So, and then that brings me up to the rich man Lazarus and Abraham, when they were talking.
Wait, I missed your question for Lisa, though. You said, here's my question.
The question is where do you think Saul was, but that, I mean, where Saul ended up after committing suicide, even though he was anointed of God.
Lisa, where are you on
I
that?
I think that those guys were in Sheol. I don't think there was a heaven and a hell. I don't think they were thinking about it that way.
Even with the suicide, is to go to amplify Travis's point.
Yeah, I think there were people. I mean, there's a lot of conflict about this in the scholarly world, and of course we don't know, right? But is Sheol someplace for some? Is it a punishment? Is it a place where God punishes you if you've done something bad, like commit suicide or, you know, defy God in other ways? Or is Sheol just this nether world for souls? And there's a lot of disagreement about this.
Interesting that at least in the Orthodox, I don't know about Reform, but in conservative to Orthodox traditions, you can't be buried in a consecrated Jewish cemetery if you commit suicide, correct?
That's right.
But you could all end up in Sheol together. So what's the point?
Well, I think that we're beyond Sheol now. But I think that at the time that the Samuel and Saul story happened, Sheol was the option. Or the Abraham option, which we didn't talk about early on, and it's important. You know, the best thing that a Jew could hope for in the days before Daniel was to sleep peacefully in the cave with your ancestors all
True.
Around you, sleeping too. So it was a good death. You were prosperous. Your children were prosperous. Their accomplishments accrued to you and your memory, and you had a peaceful, long, quiet rest. That's different from being sort of bothered and wandering around unhappily in Sheol.
Yeah, and I think that of course also speaks then to the crucifixion and the great horror of it to Jews like Jesus and his followers, because then your bones were left up on Golgotha, your femur could be taken away, you know, by animals in the middle of the night, your skull could get dragged away, you could have, and your bones could never be collected to be with your loved ones.
That's right. I mean, it's why in the Jesus story they make such a great effort to put him in a cave, you know, immediately, as fast as possible, before the Sabbath. Because sleeping in a cave with your relatives was really the best you could hope for. And wandering around cranky in Sheol was really not what anybody wanted to do.
John is on Long Island on Coast to Coast for Heaven, Lisa Miller. Go ahead, John.
Oh, how you guys doing? Okay, my question is, out of the Bible, it seems that nobody can answer this. When Cain slayed Abel, and then Cain eventually traveled to a different land, the land of Nod, and started a family. Now, how is that possible when it was only Adam and Eve and Cain on the planet at that time?
This is not that hard a question, John. I want you to know this.
Nobody seems to answer it, though.
I can answer for you. But go ahead. Lisa, do you want to start first?
You answer it, Ian. I want to hear your answer.
Well, I think my favorite answer for this, and there are many, but my favorite answer is that, and this was told to me by a rabbi, I don't know, 15 years ago, is that the people that he goes off to be with are human beings, but they don't have the divine spark. And so they're not created of God. They don't have, these were human beings that existed on the planet, but not ones that had souls. In the sense that they, as the people of God, were connected already.
Are you saying there was people on the planet before Adam and Eve? You're saying?
Yes. That what the point is that the story of Adam and Eve is the story of the creation of God's people, not the story of the creation of people. That's the that was one rabbi's opinion, and I thought it was a very interesting one.
That's
How do you feel about
one.
That?
I've never heard that.
Well, that's why you called, isn't it? Damn it! I'll add something into that. I think there's an echo of something we're learning a lot through modern science in this, is that there was still a period of time, where there were Homo sapiens and there were Neanderthals who were existing simultaneously, and one was dying out much more slowly, as the other one was on the rise to dominate the planet, and so. Could there ever be in that story, this is more of a question than any definitive statement, but could there be a hint in that story of Cain and Abel and the a banishment of Cain? Could this also be a reflection of the fact that some people were still mixing with non-Homo sapiens, and that he was forced out of his own community only to go be with other people that were not of the same evolution as he was? What do you think of that?
A little mind-boggling.
Okay, well, it is like, what is it, 4:30 in the morning your time? Lisa, what do you think of that?
I like that. I like your rabbi's answer. I've never heard that answer, and I like it a lot.
Yeah. Now, the only problem with that is it leads to a kind of jingoism.
Right.
Which establishes there goes that pluralism thing right out
right.
the window.
Exactly.
Okay. Mike is just outside of Cleveland, which some people would say just outside of paradise on coast to coast. Mike?
Good evening, Ian and Lisa.
Evening.
A quick comment and a question, please. Ian Ater, Rick Strassman's research confirms my experience that when one smokes DMT, there's a buzzing sound heard at the beginning of the trip. Lisa, if heaven represents a hope for after we die, could that have been the trigger that started the thinking mind in humans by projecting a hopefully possible tomorrow to escape from the awareness that we could die today?
There are people who think that. There are people who think that heaven is a construction of the human mind, because people fear death. There are also people who think that heaven is something that happens in your brain with the surge of chemicals as you're dying, and then after you've dead, you don't have no memory, your consciousness, that doesn't matter because you've had this moment of divine ecstasy. I don't know the answer.
I was just at a clergy retreat over the last 24 hours, and I'll tell you an interesting story from somebody there. One of the clergy told me this story about somebody that they know and trust very much about just that exact thing. And then the rest of your questions and comments for Lisa Miller. The book is Heaven, next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Lisa Miller is the author of Heaven. We've got another few minutes here for you to get your questions and comments in. Full boat of calls. We'll take them next, coming up on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Ponnett. So let's go to Ed in Monterey Park, California, wildcard line on Coast to Coast. Ed?
Yes, hi. I wanted to acquaint you with a thought in Catholicism I went to the seminary, a Catholic seminary for Claretian priests, when I was younger. And one of the things that they talked about, the difference between hell, purgatory, and heaven, was that heaven wasn't necessarily a place. It was the fact that when you went to heaven, the reward was that you were in the presence of God. And hell was just simply the opposite of that. It was the absence of God. It wasn't fire and brimstone. It wasn't it wasn't any kind of physical punishment, but just the mere absence of God was the torment of hell. And purgatory was just a temporary absence of God that you paid the price for your sins, of course.
Yeah, I think that Lisa's got that in the book. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I love that idea, and it's actually a Jewish idea also. And what you made me think of was this woman that I met who was a Catholic layperson who became, near the end of her life, a hermit because of various tragedies in her life. And she got diocesan permission to live her life as a hermit. And I was very interested in hermits because I was studying the Desert Fathers, and I wanted to meet a real-life hermit. And so I traveled, you know, she was living on Madeline Island in Wisconsin. It was pretty remote. And I, you know, traveled and drove and took a ice ferry and finally found her. And she, I kept saying, so, you know, what is heaven? What does heaven look like? What do you think about when you think about heaven? And she finally got sort of snapped at me. She sort of got irritated with me. And she said, what our caller just said, you know, heaven is being totally united. She said, no, I'm going to back up. She said, you keep talking about heaven as if it's a place. It's not a place. It's being totally united in love with God. And I thought, okay, like, I get that. I get that feeling of, you know, when you snuggle your child or when you have a moment with your spouse that's so loving and transcendent and, you know, connected to God, and then multiply that, like, that's heaven. That makes some sense to me.
And you know, you said ice ferries, or in the upper Midwest, as we often call them, pickup trucks.
It was actually a van, yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. Ice ferry. Come on. It's just a truck. They freeze over, you drive on them. Big woo. Mike is in Tampa on Coast to Coast for Lisa Miller. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Ian, I wanted to give you kudos for that last caller about Cain. I'm a pastor, and I study with several other pastors with PhDs that speak fluent Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek, and Latin, and English. And a lot of the misconceptions about what people think about the Bible are just mistranslations from the different thing. And when you said that Cain was not the only one here, that was just one story. That was, you know, the God's story. And when he was, you know, excommunicated from the Garden of Eden, God had already created all races on the sixth day. And he rested and then went on to create Adam, the actual Hebrew pronunciation is Et-Hat Adam, and on the eighth day, and which is the bloodline to Christ. That's why that's important. And Lisa, I do have a question for you, but you mentioned a few times, and this is what prompted me to call, was that a lot of people have the assumption, or they think, you know, heaven is up in the air. It's when Christ went back, you know, he arose on a cloud or ascended. So people naturally think it's from the, you know, up in the sky, just like Enoch and Elijah. Heaven in the, if you look it up, it's actually, the definition is a place of rest. And we actually, after the sixth Trump, after the Antichrist is gone, the seventh Trump, which is trumpet, we will be here on Earth with, well, I probably won't live that long, but the people that do get to live here on Earth with Christ, you know, they will be taken up after, you know.
You're talking about the rapture, Mike, right?
Well, actually, that's something that every time I speak with someone, I know you're very well versed as a pastor yourself. I know a lot of people that say there actually is no rapture, that there it's not in the Bible. It's not. I mean, there's a couple.
Let's get Lisa in here. Mike, let's get Lisa in here somewhere. Okay, so that's the whole point of this.
The question for her is, you know, they're referring to going up to the sky. You know, I was just curious to how she came upon that and why people always have, you know, they have that analogy.
Okay.
I actually had that same question myself because I came at it from a slightly different direction, but I wondered, why do we always think of heaven as up? And I asked my daughter, who was four and a half at the time, you know, where do you think heaven is? And she sat up in bed and she said, it's up there. It's near outer space. It's just an inch away from outer space, and God lives there. And I thought, okay, so even a four-year-old thinks that heaven is up in the sky. Why is that? And I went to some Bible scholars, and I said, you know, why is it that we think that heaven is up? In Eastern religion, heaven isn't up. We know a lot about the universe now. Why do we think heaven is up? And the Bible scholar I talked to, who is a guy named Alan Siegel at Barnard, said that in the Torah, the word for heaven is always shamayim, which is skies. And that, in fact, that the Hebrews had their neighbors, the Canaanites, believed in multiple gods, not just one god, but their primary god was a sky god named Baal, who made weather happen. And if you look at the Old Testament God, you see that he is up in the sky, and he's sending down angels from heaven, and he's sending down manna from heaven, and he's acting upon humans from the sky. Like a weather god, making, you know, rain happen, making drought happen, controlling events from up there. I think that with our modern ideas about the universe and, you know, everything we know about how big the universe is and how much we don't know about it, it's possible that this sky idea is a little bit outmoded. I mean, God could be anywhere. Doesn't have to be, you know, in the blue sky with the clouds. But that's the idea that's handed down to us from tradition.
I was walking through the Mall of America with my wife, and I asked her where heaven was, and she said up, and I realized she was pointing at Nordstrom's rack. Now, I do want to tell you a quick story. I was at this retreat, and a clergy person whom I trust spoke of somebody who is a senior member, but very clear of mind until the very end. And it always said that she was loving life so much that she didn't want to die in her sleep. She wanted to die wide awake. Why would she want to miss a minute, you know? And so she'd gotten ill, and there were many people that were gathered around her to honor her at the end. And they were all, she said, she witnessed this. She said, there's a, you know, sitting next to her, holding her hand, and everybody was talking, and she was still communicating very clearly, just breathing a little slower and, you know, maybe not eating as much, and but lying in bed. And she suddenly turned to everybody in the room. She went, shh, 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 they're here, and died. Mm-hmm. And this clergy person right next to her and saw her look up and went, shh, 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 they're here, and pointed up, and then died. And I just thought, oh, that is, I was right in the middle of reading your book when I heard that story. I thought, okay, well, there's up, at least in that room. Susan is in Las Vegas. on Coast to Coast for Lisa Miller. Susan?
Hi. I just want to say something. I'll try to condense it. Before I say what I'm going to say, I just want everyone listening to know that I still pray, because to quote Christopher Hitchens, it's better to believe in something than nothing. About 5 years ago, I started reading the Bible, and it was, like, incredible to me. The stories, it made sense. If you believe in good and evil, you know, it really makes a lot of sense. But I recently came across the book called God Is Not Great by Christopher Hitchens, and I'm halfway through it. And it is so thought-provoking. And at first, when I saw the title, I was kind of angry. How dare somebody say God is not great? But I would say to people to read this book, because he documents historically and the contradictions and the, you know, like you said, Ian, people used to be killed for in the name of religion. And it's fascinating historically, and he covers all religions. And he says that every religion reformed itself except the Islam, I guess the radical Islam. And also, the last part of what I want to say is, he claims that all religions are man-made and they poison everything. And I was thinking to myself, if hypothetically, let's just say they are all man-made, especially the Christian religion, and a bunch of men were sitting around one day and they were Jewish and they said, we're going to tell everybody we're the chosen people. And everybody's believed it since. I feel kind of gullible after reading this book, because I'm thinking I just read the Bible and believed it. So I'll take my answer off.
Take this answer before you go. But you'll read Christopher Hitchens and believe him.
No, I said at the beginning, Ian, that I still pray.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, I'm fine. I'm just saying, you know, we all decide what we're going to believe in. Hitchens is fine. He's an evangelical atheist. He's out there trying to get people to not believe. I don't know. He has a right to an opinion. Diane, Long Beach, California, on Coast to Coast. Diane?
Hi, Ian. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
I was compelled to call because earlier I heard you ask the question, had you thought about anyone who had gone to heaven without dying? And it reminded me of this really, really vivid dream, and really vivid. About 6 years ago, I had this about my grandmother. And when I was like awake in the dream, because it was so vivid, I was standing on a street that was, and I could see this city, and it was enormous. It was massive, but it was all made of one piece. It was made of like one piece of marble. Every step, every single thing was hooked together. And I walked down the street, and I walked up these stairs, and I walked through this enormous doorway and into this corridor and then into this room that was huge with these huge ceilings. And it was really real. And every piece of furniture was even carved into that marble. Everything was hooked together. And my grandmother came around this corner, right, and she stood there and just spoke to me telepathically and basically said, you know, I am safe. And, you know, isn't this lovely? And lovely was the perfect word, because you said something a minute ago. It was the most intense feeling of love, like love magnified by a million times.
Right.
And then my cousin who had
I'm sure you saw a lot of people in the family, but we're kind of running out of time. You say in the end, what do you say you learned from the experience, Diane?
I learned that heaven is love. It is love. In that moment, I felt that maybe there is some physicality to it as well, or maybe my dream just made that up.
Was just that vivid. No, I totally get that. Daniel in Miami, Florida, first time caller line on Coast to Coast. Daniel?
How you doing? Good morning, Ian.
Morning.
Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
I just want to make this quick. I love the subject, but it brings up so much for me. I have so many questions, and I've always had the problem with the concept of heaven, because it's just so, philosophically, it's just too much to think of, too many questions regarding when you pass away or whatever. Is it you going to the afterlife? Do you take your fear? Do you take, supposedly what they say is you're at peace nothing to fear, nothing to worry about. Everything is peaceful. But if that's all missing from you, does that, are you still you? You know, do you still have, you know, that your past experiences, your fears and your mistakes is what makes you you. So when, you know, if you lose that, you know, if you lose that, is it still you?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, one of the people I liked best in the reporting of this book was a astrophysicist that named Owen Gingerich at Harvard, and he's a believer. He's a Christian believer. And he's also an astrophysicist. He's also a scientist. And I was talking to him actually about this question that we talked about earlier, where is heaven? Is it up? Because I thought, well, he's an astrophysicist. He must have some thoughts about where it is. But he said something very similar to what you just said. He said, for him, the idea that heaven is a place that we can't see, that's out there, defined by different laws, physical laws that define our world, is not a problem, because that's what he studies all the time, and it completely makes sense to him that there would be such a place. But what doesn't make sense to him is that we, as humans, are defined by change. So every minute we're changing. We grow old, we fall in love, we have children, we get wrinkles, our hair grows longer, we get haircuts, we strive, we fail, we succeed, we get angry, we learn things, we forget things. Like, our lives are defined by being organisms that change, and we change every second. So what is it like to be in a place that's changeless? How does that work? How do we even imagine ourselves in a place that's changeless? And as you were saying, you know, if you're a person who has fears, like, you're defined by those fears in part. So what is it like to be that person but without the fears? I find that to be one of the most difficult conundrums about heaven. Because how are you if you aren't changing?
But what would you be if you had no fear?
Right.
Laird is in Baltimore. Let's see if we can squeeze in a quick question. Got to be quick, Laird.
Okay. Actually, what I wanted to say is that in 1 Corinthians 2:14.
This doesn't sound quick. I guess this doesn't sound quick. I got time for something real quick. Scott, do you have something quick for Lisa Miller?
Yeah. Have y'all heard of a book written by an 8-year-old boy who did not die and went to heaven? His name was Robert Lairdon.
No.
Does that sound familiar? Did not die, but he went to heaven. Scott, we will look into that. I'll take a listen to him.
Yeah,
and I'll
me too. Thanks so much.
Thanks for the heads up. And thank you, Jeff Unn.
I did. Thank you so much, Ian. And I just want to give a shout out to whoever picked the music for the breaks, because it was so great.
Oh, good. Jesse's loving hearing that. In fact, yeah, it's thank you so much with all these great questions at the end. You got to feel like you're like defending your dissertation or something like that. It's a really good book, and it doesn't read like a dissertation. Heaven, Our Enduring Fascination with the Afterlife. God bless you, and hope you have a great week.
Thank you so much, Ian. It was great.
Deus te amat, and I do too.